Hey, buddy, how are you?
There we go.
Yes! Fuck yes! Joe!
Technology is wonderful.
Oh my God. I am so freaking happy right now.
Technology is a wonderful thing.
That's okay. That's okay. Yeah. You know, whatever. You know, what's crazy is it was always such a pain in the ass to make things happen with guests prior to the pandemic. This like has allowed, I don't know. It just has made the world easier to do things. It seems like, I don't think we'll go back. Do you?
No, I don't. And, you know, especially with this, with the younger the people are, the less social skills that they have. So, you know, it just is like, we'll never go back. And it's kind of unfortunate because, you know, you miss that live face-to-face interaction. You can't read, you know, tone, emotion, or anything like that into it. It's all you just see is the tops of people's heads because they're buried in their damn phones.
Have you had any in your job and in the pandemic, have you had any moments where you've left your camera on or something stupid happened or anything like that?
No. I am keenly aware of leaving stuff on. You don't. That's not a good thing.
Did you see that story about Jeffrey Toobin, the one writer, the CNN guy?
Yeah, but see, he did that on purpose. You know, we did. I mean, who thinks that that's a good idea? I'm on a work call. You know, I think I'll flog the dolphin.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
well, that's a really good point you made. Hold on. That's a really good.
Joe, it was April of 1998 when I left you in a huff, and it's just stupid. I can't go back and say, hey, what happened there or whatever. And it wasn't anything that any one person did. But if I could go back at age with my 51 mentality back to my 28-year-old mentality, I was like, you know, fucking life is too short to be pissed off at people all the time. So, you know, I just wanted you to know that. I wish I'd never.
You know, it was just stupid immaturity on everybody's part, you know. I mean, everybody was stupidly immature those days, you know, and, you know, we apologize and we move on, right?
Exactly. You look the same. What are you doing? I mean, how is that even possible? You're 28 years older, but you look the fucking same.
Well, I had a couple of strokes in April, so.
And that's just getting people caught up. You had a health issue where you started to stroke out.
Well, yeah, and I didn't even know it. I worked out. My wife was yelling at me to move some trees in the backyard, so I moved some trees, and all of a sudden my hand and my right hand, you know, went a little funny, and my right leg went a little funny, and it was like, hey, you know, this isn't right. So I go into the hospital, wait 40 minutes in the waiting room, and they tell me I have a couple of strokes.
Wow. How do they figure that out? Is it through like a blood test, or do they do like
an MRI? I think it's like the lack of movement in my right hand. I'm having a stroke.
Now, thank God you caught that, because I have a friend in radio. His name's Dave Jackanet. Used to work with me here in West Michigan, who ignored all of that, and it didn't kill him, but oh my God. I've read that if you are able to, I don't know what they do to you in particular, if they did that to you, but people can be kind of pulled out of that nosedive in a particular way if you catch it early enough.
Yeah. Well, mine didn't go that far. Mine lasted about 40 minutes and just like, okay. And I was normal. So I sit in the hospital for a couple of days and, 6 days, and then they do one cardioid artery cleaning, where they just like cut your arteries out and they clean them up. And amazingly enough, next this Wednesday, I get the other one done. So
holy shit! Now, do they just go in through? What do they go in through?
They don't. They cut you right there.
Shit! So yeah, it's like cleaning a fish.
Yeah. Well, it's clean. It's unclogging a pipe. You know, it's just like So they'll put me under and they'll cut me open and take out my right carotid artery and I'll have the crazy thing about the carotid artery surgery is it irritates your nerves, so it gives you the impression that you had some strokes. So you talk like this for a while.
Yeah.
I've just been able, I think I can, when I stick my tongue out, I think I can stick it out straight now. But no, not yet.
Yeah, but you're getting there. You're getting there.
I'm getting there. But yeah, so now this other side, when they irritate the nerves, you'll be
yeah, right. So and
you'll be normal, but you know, the funny thing is I went back to work a couple of days after the, you know, I'm on the phone, I'm talking like this, I'm all talking loud, blah, 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 all over the place.
Holy shit.
They think you're pissed off, but you're just, I'm trying to talk.
You know, it's funny because, Joe, there's a lot of things I want to touch on. When we worked in radio, we were at the crest of the wave from when radio went from mom and pop ownership. Oh my God. It sounds like I just had a stroke. No, ownership.
Actually, that's closer to the truth.
Yeah. Mom and pop ownership. To when companies with the Telecommunication Act in the mid-90s deregulating it. What an unbelievable contrast in how radio was done when it was just a mom-and-pop thing to we've seen both sides of it, you know?
Yeah, and corporate radio hasn't done anybody any favors. You know, radio is unfortunately they with the corporations they put the bean counters in charge, and you know what the only thing that could save radio is going back to where it was and being local. But the bean counters, you know, they don't, you know, you get the one guy that does the five voice tracks in six markets, and you know, or in this market you got four or five station ownerships, and the same person does the middays on one station, afternoon on the other, and night on the other. You know, radio is like a personal medium. And when you lose that, I mean, see, the great thing about like when we were doing the show, it was like a personal medium. You know, I mean, people knew us. We talked about local stuff. We didn't talk about, you know, people like local.
I think that's a great point. And I think that when the way it was done back then was you had a person on manning the station all hours of the day, night, 7 days a week. And I think that was the beginning of the end when they started at overnights on the weekend and just slowly whittled it away till now. If you were to look at the on-air lineup of any radio station in New York City, there's three people that work there. We had like 15 to 20 people that worked at the radio station on the air.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, you know, and it just made it more personal. You know, it just, they talk, you know, you get these corporate PDs that think that they're smarter than everybody else. And really all they like to do is just, you know, well, I'm not going to say corporate PDs, you know, they just, you know, they like the power.
I remember before I was lucky enough to get the job at Z93, I discovered the radio station and I had come from Detroit and I knew that there was big personalities in Detroit. And I thought, well, and I heard Two Men and a Babe in the morning. I heard Connie Shilkey middays. I heard Tim Hartley afternoons. I heard Rick Ellis at night. And I heard Doug Brooker on the overnight. And I went, wow, what a lineup. And I can still remember the lineup to this day because it all meant something to me. You know what I mean? So it was kind of like I gravitated to the station. because of it kind of fulfilled. I thought, oh, well, this is cool. We've got that type of radio here in Northern Michigan, or I guess mid Michigan. So that was cool. And, you know, then getting a part-time job there on the overnight, I couldn't believe it. I, to this day, get excited and chills thinking about, oh my God, I'm on this 39,000 watt, 50,000 watt equivalent radio station. Here I am making $5 an hour. I couldn't be more excited than right now. And I remember first person I interacted with. I walked into that mobile home and I sat there. Do you remember Becky, the one who would work the front desk?
Yes.
Oh my God. This was at a time when you could flirt with people and they're right. Like, oh, Joe, knock it off. Quit grabbing my ass.
Yeah. I don't think I did that with Becky. I think Becky was like life problems Becky. there's always one person in the office that has a plethora of life problems. It's like they walk around with a cloud over their head. You know, their car got stolen in the morning and their kid ran away from home the night before. Oh yeah. And by the way, she's got diverticulitis or whatever. that was her.
So, okay. Off I go. Now, years later, you know, I'm making my way in, and I actually had a notion after several years of the radio station that I'm going to be here for the rest of my life, and I couldn't be happier. And that was fine. I was actually content with that. I enjoyed it. Then there was the day, the Mike Ferris incident, who I talk with Mike still to this day. This was the single most epic thing I've ever witnessed in my entire life when it comes to drama at a radio station. And I still mention it to him, and he still laughs to this day about it. So will you go down that road with me?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, good. Okay.
Because so, I wasn't even there for it.
No.
All I did was the morning after, I get a call. Hey, could you bring a vacuum cleaner to the station?
Okay. So now you got to understand, Joe has at this point, he's already turned his life around. Joe is a drunk, and so am I. And in fact, when I stopped drinking, Joe was a big part of helping me recover. I mean, when I was at the Joe and the Poor Boy 4-man scramble to benefit Easter Seals, is the last day I drank. It was June of 1996. I don't remember the date, but it was bad, you know. And so, you know, Joe was a big help for me in getting better. So, Joe was also a big help for our pal Mike, who was the boss. Now, Mike was a fucking ball breaker, you know, and he didn't like fucking around or anything like that, and. He was, you know, a little bit short-tempered. One day, the radio station had great ratings. I don't know anything about ratings, but I walk up to the radio station, and everybody's having a ratings party because they did well. And Mike Thomas, the general manager, God rest his soul, and everybody's drinking champagne and having a good time. And a friend of Joe's and mine, a guy by the name of Rick Church, who's now in Florida, I remember him saying to me, hey, poor boy, because that was my name. I go, yeah. He goes, because he hadn't been there very long. He goes, I think that Ferris guy is getting a little frisky with Char. Now, Char was a sales executive. She's a really nice lady, cute. And I go, huh? What are you talking about? I go, yeah, I got a feeling there's something going on. And I didn't even pay attention to it. Everybody leaves. I walk out into that area where the receptionist would work. And I look out that window and there's another building where the salespeople were, like sales executives would work. It's another mobile home. It's a second mobile home.
Right. They just brought in, they figured we needed salespeople. So they brought in a second mobile home. No bathrooms or anything, just another mobile home. You had to go from one mobile home to the other mobile home to go to the bathroom.
So holy shit. I look out the window and Mike is on top of her on a desk. And I'm like, oh my God. Now I'm the only one that knows this. Okay. I go down the hallway and there's this head engineer. He works, I think, in Lansing to this day. His name is Kevin. And I said to Kevin, I go, Kevin, something's going on. And I explained to him what's happening. And I go, okay, this is terrible. And he's like, oh my God. All right. So then I go back to the studio and the phone rings. It's the hotline. And I pick it up and, hello. You just say hello, you know, and it's Mike's wife. And she says, hello, this is Mrs. So-and-so. Is my husband there? So I realize I'm fucked, because if I say yes, I'm screwed. If I say no, I'm lying. I don't know what to do. And I say, I kind of like, I don't remember what I said. If I said, I think I did say, no, he's not here. Okay. Which is kind of true, because he wasn't in the room that I was in, nor was he in the mobile home that I was in at the time. All right. So then I go to Kevin. I go, Kevin, dude, what if she comes here? And he goes, nah, she'll never do that. She'll never do that. And then I'll never forget it, because I was turning on the mic coming out of Metallica's Enter Sandman, and Kevin's running down the hall going, she's here, she's here, she's here. And I'm like, oh no. And the mic's on, and you hear impact of one car hitting another. She smashed her car into someone's car. Holy shit. So this is a catastrophe. And I close the door. I'm thinking this is going to be like some, you know, an episode of Snapped where somebody's going to get killed. And so all I know is I hear glass breaking and I hear screaming. And then I come walking out a minute later, acting like I don't know what's going on. And I open the door and I go, hey, what's going on? And Ferris's shirt is ripped. I think she's tried to kill him. He's bleeding. And I go, and he's drunk. And he goes, you know, if you say anything, you're fucking fired. And I go, oh, okay, smell you later. I go back in, slam the door. Holy shit. Oh, my God. So this ends, and then they leave. Mike's wife calls me and says, thanks for lying to me. And I'm like, ah. And so I tried to explain where I was, and I ended up being her, like, therapy for, like, 3 hours. I'm talking to this poor lady. I felt so bad. Meanwhile, while that's happening, she had gotten a hold of the chick's boyfriend, so he knows what's up. He kicks her out, drives her back to the radio station, throws all her clothes that are in garbage bags on the front lawn. I've got to console her, so I'm consoling her. She's in a production room crying in a corner, and I'm talking to the missus on the phone. I'm doing all of this while I'm trying to do a radio show, Joe. Oh.
Yeah, that was in a bowling alley doing a gig. Yeah, she. Everybody called the bowling alley.
Oh Jesus, my God! Yeah, it was pandemonium. And then we had like an all staff meeting, and Mike, he saved it. He fucking hasn't drank since, and yep. he somehow brought it back. I don't know how he did, but his. What a saint of a wife she was. How about her, you know? I mean, that is really one for the ages.
Yeah, I think it took us a few days to get the blood off the windows.
And in fact, I talked to Mike from time to time. I go, look, I say to him, I go, hey, how's your wife? And he goes, she's fine. She still doesn't like you. I go, what do you mean she doesn't like me? I'm the helper. I was doing all I could to keep that. To keep her, you know, but whatever. It doesn't matter. At this point, I'm just glad that he's okay. Glad he's healthy, and she's doing good. So, but my God, what a time. What a time, Joe.
Oh, yeah. I haven't talked to him in years.
Yeah. I go through moments like that where I'm like, I have to talk to someone. And that's kind of how it came up with you when I heard that. I talked to you once when I moved back to Michigan, and then that was about it. And then when I heard that you fell sick, I was like, holy shit, I gotta get him on. So this is a perfect opportunity. You ended up, got out of radio, and tell me where your brain is in that. Tell me what you can tell me about all of that. Because after I left, you remained on C93 for years. What happened?
Well, apparently there are a few things that you can't say to people. You know, I mean, it is what it is. I've dealt with it, you know. I mean, everything has to come to an end, you know.
Yep. When I left the radio station, there was a lady by the name of Nancy Diamond who ran the radio station. And
she's
Nance?
Still around.
She's still around?
I believe she's in Flint.
Okay. Nancy said, we're going to continue to call the show Joe and the Poor Boy. What were your thoughts about continuing to call the show Joe and the Poor Boy?
Yeah, that wasn't the wisest of... In fact, it was, if you remember, it was Jack that
Jack Lawson was the PD.
It
was his brainchild, huh?
Yeah, that was him. If you remember, Jack was the guy that, was smarter than everybody.
Oh, just, he was a pain in the ass.
Just ask him. He was the one that wanted to, when he first got there, wanted to take the Saturday night show off.
The captain.
Yeah. The one with like a 35 share.
Right.
Huh?
And it's funny. I was just bragging about you before you got on about how big that was, and no one could explain it. It's pointless to try to explain why.
No,
it doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't matter if you've got two flies fucking on the air, as long as it has a 35 share, and it was from beginning to end, it always had that. And I'll never understand why he would ever want to do that. You can say what you will about it being stupid or this, that. It doesn't matter. I mean,
well, so, radio guys. Radio guys never got that show, and they never will, because it basically broke all the formatic rules. It didn't, you know, there was no back sell, there was no front sell, there was no, I could basically do what I want, you know, God bless Tom Petty, but Tom Petty didn't belong on Saturday night. It was a show that was done by a radio guy, or not a radio guy, but a radio fan. It wasn't meant to be anything. If all of a sudden, if a record, I just got tired of a record in the middle of it, I just stopped it.
Stop. I'll never forget it. Before I even thought about applying for a job there, in 1991, I was, just to give you an example of what you were dealing with. In 1991, I was at a party at a bonfire and drinking heavily, and you're talking 30, 40 people. And I'll never forget it. It was like a Warrant song or some hair band that we played back then. And it was just noise, background noise. And a lot of people smoking, drinking, and then you started talking before I even knew you. And the room, the outside area, everybody stopped. And it got really quiet. And so there you are going, ah, where Captain Sucks. Why? And you're doing that. And everybody's like, oh, what's he going to say next? And I was like, holy shit. How is this even a thing? They're not listening to the music. They're waiting for him to do that. And then I was like, wow, that is a command. And that's the show. It was set up for people who are doing that exact thing, smoking, drinking on a Saturday night,
Right. And I think the key was the people listening, because if you remember, I would put, 20, 30 calls an hour on the air. People really think that they could, you could call in and actually talk, because I would stop records if a conversation was good enough and put somebody on the air.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it just kind of from 7 to midnight, that was the show. And I'll never forget, oh my God, I'm following the captain. Okay, I actually would take over for you when I was just a part-timer. And man, I tell you what, for like 3 hours, there was a residual effect of your show with me. And so, I mean, it was to get that amount of people calling in was quite a thrill for me, making $5 an hour. But it was absolutely awesome.
Yeah, don't answer the phone. it was the dumbest thing ever. It wasn't meant to be like, it was just... It was just a dumb show.
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't any thought behind it. I mean, the voices weren't that good. I didn't, you know, I didn't even make the voice that good. It was just, it was just an old crabby guy yelling. And
can you tell me what the, how you got the idea to do it and how, like, the genesis of the whole bit started?
Oh, it was real simple. It was like, we talked about Mike Ferris. You know, that was when pirate radio started. And if you remember Los Angeles, they tried to do corporate pirate radio. You know, as dangerous as a bunch of guys in suits in a room can be. You know, well, Ferris and I were, well, what happened if we used like a real pirate? You know, just kind of a Krusty the Clown before there was Krusty the Clown.
Right, right. You
know? Yeah, and so that was it.
Incredible.
And the bird was just me going,
Captain Sockseye!
I put like five things on a cart and just wrote, you know, I wouldn't even know what was coming up.
Was it actually Jack who said, all right, I want the show done?
Well, Jack said he would see when he took over.
He
would see that. We'll see. We'll talk about the future of the show.
And then eventually he just said, okay, no more.
No, it won over because I sold some sponsors on it.
Okay.
Well, you got to run it, Jack. Yeah, Jack was, you know, one of these, you know, programming guys. He was the guy that, you know, we used to have to fight with Jack to get the, you know, every other station had their morning show in their ID. Okay. You know, you're listening to blah, 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 home of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Joe and the Poor Boy in the Morning, best rock all day.
Right. Not Jack. Not that genius.
No.
You know? Yeah. Why would we want to put that in the, ID? You know, he's the same guy that didn't want to change the name of the show.
He was an overthinker. I remember particular there was a lot of nuanced conversations where a lot of time was spent on really silly, trivial things that could have been spent that time doing something that was productive.
He was corporate before corporate was really corporate, because he was the essence of corporate. We got to study this and we got to, you know, radio is just something you do, man. You don't. You know, well, we got to study the concepts and just do it.
Hey, what's up? It's your pal EZ with another amazing partner for the Eric Zane Show podcast, the Eufy Video Lock. Oh my gosh. Smart lock, 2K cam and doorbell, 3-in-1 triple security. You got everything in one device. All right. Rather than install piecemeal, hoping that you got this app that it's going to work okay in that app. And oh, my God, this is not just for security, but also for convenience. No more worrying about losing keys. And you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated camera. So, you know, like they all have their codes. They walk up to the door. They punch it in. The door unlocks. In they go. And, of course, it's a video camera, so it's all there. You can see who shows up at your door. This is fantastic. We live in a golden age for home security. And the Eufy Video Lock is the top of the heap, okay? You can go to eufyofficial.com/videolock for more information. This thing is easy to install. The setup, all you need is a Phillips screwdriver. No drilling or anything like that. All the keyless entry components make it so fantastic. 0.3-second fingerprint recognition. Amazing. No battery anxiety. You've got the ultimate, I don't know what it is, super lithium whatever that keeps this thing powered for a long, long time. No monthly fee on this, unlike other brands that do that. They just bend you over and charge you a monthly fee. I love the Eufy Video Lock. Get to eufyofficial.com/video lock. eufyofficial.com/video lock.
You were, I don't know of anybody who's ever done this. You would do the morning show and then, you know, as the morning winds down, you would then go and sell advertising for the radio station. And for like 30 plus years, you made a lot of people a lot of money. I've never heard of anybody before you that has done that, and no one since. Take me through, you know, what how it was working, because I remember you putting in so many hours. I couldn't believe that you were able to pull it all off, because you'd go from, you know, 4 a.m. to 7 p.m. every single day.
Well, nobody's that dumb. I mean, nobody is, you know, I mean, when we first started, I mean, it was a small station, so everybody did everything. You know, I just started off on the mornings by accident, you know, Ferris again, and his partner at the time, Joe Martin, you know, Mike at the time was very difficult to work with. And anybody that worked with Mike closely for any length of time wanted to stab him in the heart.
Yeah.
So their morning show got to that point. So Ferris was doing something, and he saw me at a comedy club doing some stand-up. And, hey, I didn't know that. And, well, duh, I've been on your staff for a few years here. Then the show started. That's how I started. And it wasn't until like 3 or 4 years into the morning show that they decided to pay me just separately for the morning show.
They didn't even pay you.
No, they just, well, we'll just, but then again, you know, with these mom and pop radio owners, I can't even remember the guy's name. He was an ad ever in advertising in Detroit, but he came.
Charlie?
Up,
Charlie? You're talking about Charlie?
Nope, before Charlie.
Okay.
He came up and said, hey, the FCC's coming up. Okay. You're an American Indian, aren't you? I said, no, my name is Volk. I'm German. Well, if you could be an American Indian for a week, yeah, when the FCC is here, we would certainly appreciate it.
Oh, so you got it. So like for the equal employment thing, I guess, is that?
Yeah. Yeah. They, so a guy with the last name Volk was, how is that even close to being Native American?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My real name's Running Water, but
I tan well. That was about,
yeah, right.
You know. So yeah. Could you be a Native American for a week?
Okay. So now it goes Ferris and Joe Martin, and then Joe Martin and Joe Volk, and then you bring on a young lady. I forget was it Stacy? Was that her
name?
Yes. That Two Men and a Babe is born. Okay, so the Two Men and a Babe show happens. Okay, then they got rid of the babe.
Well, that and Joe left to pursue a career in medicine.
Then enter Mark Arturi.
Well.
Now, Mark is still, to this day, he's in showbiz. I did a little check-in on Mark. He's in Chicago, Chicagoland. He used to always say, oh, I'm from Chicago, but he's from Aurora. He wasn't right from Chicago. He's from Aurora. And, you know, I mean, he was hokey as hell, but whatever. It went for a period of time. And then I was going to get out of radio. And then Rick Church was now the program director. Ferris had left. And Rick says, hey, before you leave, this is what I think we want to do. And you and Rick had kind of, I guess, talked about this or something like that?
Yeah, you know, and to be fair to Mark, I mean, Ferris hired him without us ever meeting.
Yes, right. And that's very rare. That never happens.
Here's your new partner.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mike promised him a lot of things that never happened. You know,
right, right.
He was going to be, you know, the man. He was going to be the, when I'm, well, wait a minute. I'm the man.
Yeah.
You know, and. So anyway, yeah, we talked about it, and bam,
right. And so now, when it comes to the show, Joe is the big driving force. He's the id of the show. You know, there's a lot of the almost all of the creative thing about it was Joe's driving, and Joe would come up with ideas and he'd write bits. And then I would try to do voices and things like that. And it just kind of worked.
Yes.
It even started to click before I started on mornings, because I would do the Eddie Howell impression. And then I had a character called Cecil, and
yep,
it was getting traction and it was fun. And Joe said, "Hey, why don't you, we're going to call you and wake your ass up in the morning and you got to do these bits." So fuck, man, that was fun. I look back on those as just great, great times. And that was the beginning of starting to do mornings, was that, right? All of that stuff that you gave me that opportunity.
Yeah, I love characters. I mean, I loved, your characters were great. You know, I love writing for characters. And the cool thing about it was so amateurish, the point was we would try to crack each other up. if you remember when you would do George blah blah.
And yes.
And one day I decided to do Rick Mahorn, and it was the worst, funniest. But see, audiences like that stuff.
Right. When you break character, when it cracks you up.
Right. Right. When if it's funny to us, it's funny to them. And really, that's the only test I ever used. Gosh, this is really funny to me.
Now, and that's true. And when I a lot of what I did, I ripped off from the style of radio as George Beyer from JJ and the Morning Crew in Detroit. And so I kind of use that as like a muse or a template. And in particular, I remember doing that Dirty Ernie character, which is an impression of Ernie Harwell. And one time before I wasn't on mornings, you would call me at my house, and I was living in Midland. And there was the bit was everything would lead to a long, drawn out story by me that you would like, "Oh, God, this is terrible. This is so boring." I know it sounds stupid right now, but it was really fucking funny. Trust me. And one moment in particular, I was describing an old-time baseball player, Joe, by the name of Fuzzy Folger. And the player's name was Folger because I was making coffee as I'm doing it for the morning. And you can hear the can rattling. And then these guys start cracking up. And then Mark goes, "Ernie, are you making coffee right now?" And I go, "Oh, wow, look at that. His name's Fuzzy Folger. His name's right on the can here. Holy cow." And it was just ridiculous, man. And then, so everybody's cracking up and laughing their asses off. And that was, oh, my God. I look back. Key points in my brain are just burned there forever. And I don't remember anything, but I remember those moments because they were really, really special, you know?
Well, then that's what's lost in radio now, because it's all so corporate and sanitized that it just is, you know.
Yeah. And it's remarkable, Joe. That's kind of what I want to get into with you now is, do you think this could possibly just go away?
What, radio?
Yeah.
Oh, radio's already gone away. They're dead. They just don't know it yet. You know, I think that, you know, until radio figures out a way to make money, without like the 5 or 6 minute commercial break, they're going to have trouble, because again, who in today's on-demand world, like your podcast here or Alexa or Spotify or all these other, who's going to sit through 5-6 minutes of commercials?
I think it's that's a fair point. And I think that if you were to go, let's say you're in the break room at work anywhere USA, and there's 20 people sitting there. And if you just blurted out, "Raise your hand if you've listened to the radio today." And then raise your hand if you've done, and you could say any online source, doesn't matter what. And that could be TikTok videos, YouTube videos, Spotify, all the things you just said, they'd all go up. And I mean, nowadays, outside of the car, people don't even have a radio.
Right.
Now, one of the things that ratings arbitron or Nielsen did was they allow online listening to factor into the measurement, which I don't know if that necessarily is going to help, because I still don't know anybody who is going to go to a radio station on their phone and listen to what's there because of what you just said, those long blocks of commercials. We don't need commercials anymore.
No, no. And until they figure out a way to make money. And again, radio, if radio would just go back to what it did best, I mean, radio, great radio is local. When you bring in all these corporate people, when you bring in the consultants, when you bring in all those other people, they just ruin it, because radio should be a reflection of your community and not, you know, when I was doing the show, you know, I didn't want some consultant in Buffalo to get the show. I wanted the person in Bay City, Michigan to get the show, because that's where the, you know, so you talk about Bay City stuff, you talk about Saginaw stuff, you talk about Midland stuff.
Yeah, I remember, and I think that we worked very hard to try to make that a thing, because the news that was big around there was a lot of gigantic personalities in and around where we live. There's this gentleman by the name of Art Doerr, and I don't know if Art's still kicking today, but Art was the guy who created the Tough Man contest.
Right.
And unbelievable entrepreneur, and he's like a pro wrestling character, this guy. I mean, right. He is, I would even say he's feared. He's the type of guy who,
yes,
you do not fuck with this guy. Hello, nice to meet you. You don't say shit negative about this guy. And it's those type of personalities that and the news that happened around there, we immersed ourselves in it, so that it was almost like it was a utopia or a banana republic. We were talking about the shit going on and writing bits about it. I remember there was one bit you wrote, Joe, because every year there's a harvest of sugar beets.
Yes.
Okay. And Joe wrote a bit, a pre-recorded bit about a car product that you put on your car called Beet Off. Because and the idea was, when you're driving on the road and if sugar beets fall off the truck and hit your car, you want to have some beet off on your car. And, you know, I might still have that bit somewhere on a reel-to-reel tape around here, Joe.
Yeah, it wasn't rocket science.
I'm telling you, man, because you would leave me the scripts for these bits, and I'm like, and you would actually hand write it. Pen and paper with the lines. I'm like, oh my God, this is fucking unbelievable. So then Joe would actually write a bit and I would go and make it. That was the process. He'd write it, I'd make it. And then while making it, I'd throw in little nuances and things like that, not changing the overall crux of the thing. But, and then he wouldn't even listen to the fucking thing. And then we just put it on the next day.
Right. Well, I mean, that was great radio.
Yeah. God, I look back on that. I made $22,000 a year, but man, I didn't have a complaint in the world. I loved it. It was absolutely spectacular. Man.
Uh-oh, somebody's I'm just reading the comments on the side. Is it possible to find old Z93 Joe and the Poor Boy clips?
Yeah. I wonder.
Yeah.
I wonder.
I have all those best of reels in my basement.
You do? Really?
The reel-to-reels?
Wow.
Remember we did the first weekly best of shows?
Yeah, that was
before other people were doing best of shows.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it was actual on reel to reel.
Yes.
Had the old school way of doing it. Had to edit with a tape editor and cut the tape and all that shit. It was everything was a process, but man, I can't imagine. I don't even remember when radio switched, you know. It seems like it was just almost like a gradual thing. You know, I remember we like made a big deal about, because we had CDs.
Yeah. Yeah. And then because we had CDs, nobody could smoke in the studio anymore, because we were going through 3 CD players a month.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That was the thing. I remember I would go in there and be cigar smoke in there, because you'd be constantly smoking cigars. Do you still smoke cigars?
No. I haven't smoked cigars in a while.
No kidding.
The stroke thing, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Joe, how many people had the name Poor Boy? I remember there was a dude named Zach right after me.
Yeah.
He didn't last long.
No, that was a Jack thing. Jack decided, Jack decided he was going to hire the overnight guy to do mornings, and he was a great guy, but he was in over his head.
I can't imagine the stress you would get, because I was under a lot of stress where I was trying to fill in for Drew. It was terrible. I can imagine him assuming the name made it a million times worse, the amount of shit that you guys caught over that.
Well, yeah, that, and he was the overnight guy, so he wasn't very good.
No, it wasn't great.
So then, let's see, who did we do after Zach? I think we did Kangas.
That is Todd Kangas, yes?
Yeah, he was doing afternoons, I think.
Is he still with the radio station?
No. He went off to Indianapolis to do some syndicated thing with a woman, and that didn't work. And let's see, who after then it was Jay. Jay was working. Then we did Jay, and finally Adam before
that was it. And then when you left, the name of the show changed, obviously. Yeah. And who is Jay or is Adam still on the morning show now?
I think so. Yeah, I haven't listened.
Wow, incredible. I remember you and I used to regularly get on the air with other radio stations, and you would write what I'm supposed to say. It was easier for me to get on because your voice is more distinct than mine. People would, as soon as you said hello, they would know it was you. One gentleman in particular was a man by the name of Johnny Burke, and yes. I actually spoke with him years ago. I forgot why he reached out to me. I think he got cut loose, and I think I talked to him about something. We used to get on there and say nasty shit on the air on these other shows. I think he would put live calls on.
Yeah.
And we had heard through the grapevine that he threw a chair through a wall or some shit after we got out of the air.
Well, and the funny thing was with all the consolidation, we ended up working in the same building together.
Oh, no shit.
Down the hall. Yeah.
Wow. Oh my God. Yeah. It was you and then the folks at IOG and the folks at HNN. Everybody was kind of in the same room, same building. Wow.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Consolidation.
Yeah. My God. There was a time when we put on another radio station called The Blitz.
Yep.
And dude, that was one of the first automated radio stations in America. And it actually had an actual jukebox full of CDs. But before that, we actually had to go and put tape and pre-recorded tapes on. Oh, fuck. What were they thinking?
Yeah. In fact, they ran Captain reruns on Monday through Friday.
Yes. Oh, Jesus, Joe. God, I could sit there and talk about this stuff forever. I tell everybody what you're doing now, Joe. You're actually still making money being a sales guy.
Yeah, I've worked for the baseball team here in Midland. I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay. All right. You're selling tickets or like advertising?
Tickets.
Nice. Well, I've heard a lot of great things about that place. It's called Dow Diamond, I believe. And yep. It's just a really great place to work. And I've heard nothing but good things about that. Wow. And now your kids are brilliant. They're both supposed to be doctors. Is that what I'm understanding? What are they studying?
No, one is in New York working. He's a corporate guy working for British Aeronautics. And the other's got one more year of med school left.
Dude, that's incredible. I can't believe it. I remember Jamie was the one that was in the hospital for a long time.
Yep.
Upon birth. Yeah, I will never forget it, man. That poor little guy, he was in there forever.
3 pounds, 1 ounce.
Wow. The twins. Fantastic. Yeah. Your lovely bride, Angela, has been the rock of the family since the very beginning. I'm sure you'll probably agree with that, right?
Oh, yeah.
She was great. Diana and her worked together at a place, and she's still continued to work in that field, right?
Yeah, she owns her own business now when she's not collecting dogs.
Oh, so. You got a few?
Oh, God. Yeah.
We've got four.
So do we.
Oh! That is awesome. Holy shit.
So do we. And, you know, if I could get rid of them today, I would.
Oh, come on.
Oh.
That's bullshit. You love them.
Oh, I'm too old.
Joe, what about radio, man? Is there any hope that you could get back on the radio? Would you ever even consider that? I mean, what?
No.
You're just.
I think with social media and all this other noise, first of all, there isn't anybody that would ever put me on. And second of all, you know, I'm just too old to deal with this and this and, oh, these people are mad. These people are mad. I don't care. You know, I mean, our favorite hobby now is being offended for people that with stuff that doesn't even affect us, you know, and I'm not saying never, but at the same time, you know, I don't even have social media accounts. So, and my life got 100% better when I got rid of all my social media accounts.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. You know. I can't imagine what it's like to be that much to actually pull back. I mean, anytime I lose my phone for a significant time, I'm like, you know, I should probably hope that it stays lost, because I can understand that.
I don't care what you had for dinner. Social media is people trying to justify, you know, their lives, you know, by proving to others when they're really trying to prove to themselves that they, you know, that their life is meaningful and all that. And I don't know. I don't need social media to tell me that my life is meaningful or anything.
Exactly. Yeah, I can see that. I think that there is. I mean, if you kind of want to cut out all the distractions, I can totally.
It's like people post on social media because they want affirmation and they want all that sort of stuff, and or, you know, people like to post their stupid opinions on social media about things that they don't know anything about.
Right. Right.
And everybody gets mad about everything, you know. Whatever happened to the concept about, you know, agree to disagree?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know? Okay.
Well, I think I fall victim to that too. I mean, I know that when I see somebody that says something that I don't like, my gut reaction is type of like I don't. I'm kind of like, I wish I had a dimmer switch instead of an on-off switch.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, if that's the person's opinion, okay. As long as it doesn't harm me, I don't care, you know.
I wish I did that. But I'm like the type, when I see someone's opinion that I don't like, I always have the urge to say something stupid about them, like saying, hey, you're stupid, and tell them.
No, you know, everybody has the right to be stupid, you know. I just can't get myself caught up in all that sort of drama and that sort of just,
yeah.
You know, it's funny because we were talking about, here's the deep philosophical stuff of the day. You know, we were talking at a AA meeting about the meaning of maturity. What the definition of maturity is when you finally realize that you're not the only person on this planet.
That's absolutely true, because then you're considering others.
Right. Well, it's that whole, well, I'm offended, so you need to take this down, or I'm offended and you need to do this. I'm offended. You need to. Well, mature person goes, you know,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Other people have the rights to do stuff. And again, as long as they're not in my backyard, you know, taking my family hostage, I don't care, you know. Go ahead.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, man, I know you're busy. I know that this has been awesome talking to you, and I'd love to get you back on here to kind of like just, I don't know, whatever, further down the road, if there's anything coming up, I'd love to bounce stuff off you if you're open to that.
Yeah, sure. I'll be talking starting Wednesday for the next 3 months. I'll be talking like a stroke victim, but
yeah. Maybe yeah, that's a perfect time.
Talk about you. But, hey, Good to talk with you, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, this is probably the worst time to ask this, but Carol, the hot babe in the office, alive or dead?
I don't know. When I left, I haven't talked to any of them. So
okay, gotcha.
So, and not because I was mad or anything. It's just, you know what? It's just time to, you know, you can't relitigate the past. The past is the past, and you know, you don't even know if you have a future. So you just basically have to play the game that's in front of you today. You know, that's the only thing I can do anything about. So.
All right. The legendary Joe Volk. If you go to Midland, buy a baseball ticket. Buy it from Joe.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Joe. Talk to you, buddy.